Welcome to the Baltic Triangle podcast with me, Mick Ord. No Mark Reeson this week, you'll be delighted to hear, but he's back in a month's time, hopefully, when normal service will be resumed. This month, our podcast concerns food poverty. For many of us, one of the saddest aspects of modern life in the UK has been the emergence of food banks. They're now established in all the major towns and cities, and many of us regularly give food at the supermarkets, who then pass it on to the food banks to help people who've hit hard times. Robbie Davison runs Can Cook, a charity which fights food poverty from their offices in the Matchworks in the Speke area of Liverpool. 2 years ago, Can Cook teamed up with the Liverpool Echo to launch Share Your Lunch, a hugely successful campaign which provided fresh quality food to thousands of local families. Robbie has now spread his wings, and Can Cook has developed what is essentially a catering business which runs arm in arm with the charity. They're now aiming to win contracts with local authorities to provide schools with fresh food at affordable prices, to compete with the big caterers for business, and to continue to fight food poverty as part of the contracts. And they're not just keen to provide food for schools either, but also care homes, and not just on Merseyside. Robbie's highly critical of the way in which the food banks operate and thinks their business model is not fit for purpose. He has some controversial and challenging views about how we donate food to the needy, as I found out when I went to visit him in the Matchworks a few weeks ago.
So, what I'm setting out here is a food parcel for a family of four. As you can see, it's a whole load of tins. It's a whole load of tins, and this is put together from a list to Trussell Trust, which is the largest food aid charity. And so this is what they advise, making up a family of four food parcel. So there's no fresh goods, as you can see, at all. And what appears in there is if you've got tins, you just throw tins in. Quite randomly, you know, there's a list, but you throw them in quite randomly. Give people some cereal. And then, as we do this, the reason I'm getting them all out the box, and we'll leave some bits there, is my challenge when anybody comes and visits us is, see yourself as a parent of a family with a couple of kids. Now cook yourself a meal that you would like as a meal, right? And then, once you've done it, cook another one. And remember, this is for 3 days. Oh, no, it isn't. So we had the Joseph Rowntree Foundation here, head of policy, who goes out and supports food banks. You know, she's always on Twitter, food banks this, food banks that. So we got her here to say, come and have a chat with us. And as a parent, she's a parent of two children, cook yourself a family meal. So she kind of stood back and couldn't do anything with it. Because interestingly, you know, people go, so there's a free Bentos pie. By the way, don't forget, family of four. And then we do have a tin of potatoes here, and maybe some sweet corn or some peas.
And some golden syrup as well.
And some golden syrup, yeah. But interestingly, you and I know that what's sitting in front of you there, three Bentos pie, one tin of spuds and one tin of corn, is won't even get a child and an adult. So this is what the Trussell Trust recommends you do, right? So if you've got no heating in the house, pull the lid off, eat it cold, right? If you've got no heating in the house, Danish ham, open the tin, chop it up, eat it cold. And eat them as products, so the family doesn't get to eat the same thing. So you might give the kids the tins of hot dogs, and you might sit there chewing on ham. And if you've got any veg, pour it cold.
And yet people are making these donations with a good heart.
Yeah, and I think the public think they're solving a problem. Random food in, random food out. You know, one of the things I've done in Tesco's many times is I go to the food bank parcel. You know, I've found Christmas pudding in a trolley in February. You know, and so people are going, you know, well, the skins, so give them a tin of Spam, because I might eat it every now and then,
in reality, what we're forcing people to do is eat this all the time. The story is that people only ever need this three or four times. No, people are living on this for months, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, and not eating proper food. They are killing themselves. So in front of us, tinned Danish ham, spam, and even the noodle type stuff. This is food that's been named on a killer food list. This is the food that kills people in the longer term.
So what should be happening? Because the food banks, a lot of people are saying, well, I spend a couple of quid a month giving to people on the food banks, and they're obviously doing it with a good heart, aren't they?
Yeah.
So what should happen, and will it happen?
I'm sceptical about will it happen, but it's we've been saying for 4 years now, educate the donor. So if you and I would, you know, if we were choosing to donate something to a food bank, we want to know that it's going to get eaten. So just let the donor know. Don't give us a tin of spam. Give us, for instance, a tin of lentils that goes with a recipe. So this all needs to be recipe. This is not recipe. This is a ready, steady cook exercise. Go to the supermarket and say, instead of putting a trolley at the back there, put things on the shelves which says ready for a food bank because it goes with this recipe. Not like you kind of taste the different stuff you see in supermarkets where you go, choose that recipe card and then there's all the ingredients. Why not do that? Supermarkets can do it as a sale item, so why can't they do it as a food poverty item as well? So people then can go, you know what, I'm going to buy someone a full meal, or I'm going to buy them the components of a meal. And then in food banks themselves, the volunteers are getting trained because they get to get an understanding of how meals go together rather than doling out products. Interestingly, I'll show you tins of beans. Food banks don't like beans because everyone donates beans. That's the most nutritious thing on that table, but they don't give them out because they know nothing about food and they think people don't like beans.
So what was the reaction of the boss of the Joseph Rowntree Foundation when you said all this to her?
It's not ideal. It's not ideal, but it's a service. It's a service. And I said, well, you're the people who've got the hands on policy. You can change this service. But they're all in it together. And I really do believe this. There's things called food poverty alliances now, which are mostly southern-based. You know, they're over in York, Joseph Rowntree, but these are mostly southern-based. And what they're actually doing is getting around the table, protecting this model. They protect this model. Because without this model, they don't have an alliance. Now, interestingly, all they have to do is educate the donor, make sure that the things that are donated can be reused and eaten, and then the things that can be eaten go together as meals. It's a really easy twist. The Trussell Trust have told us in writing that we do not believe good food is part of the solution. So they run food banks. They've grown exponentially. They've just taken £10 million from Asda, because what Asda are doing is using this cast. They're going, fantastic. Give you 10 million, we'll get rid of all our crap food, let's talk about it in real terms. And then what we're doing that, we can offset that to tax and stuff like that, and we're seen as fantastic in the marketplace. So they've taken 10 million, and they've taken 10 million, and they said they don't want to open any more food banks. But they don't think good food is part of the solution. So what they're saying to Asda is, we'll be the recipients of all this crap food. And we'll keep doing that because, in the name of charity, the public thinks the job is done. There's a leading journalist who works for The Guardian, I won't name him, and he said to me recently, Robbie, the thing you've got to overcome is politicians love food banks, the public love food banks, and people love to volunteer. And I said, but what about people's hunger? And he went, what about people's hunger? Need to be a cookery school, and the cookery school's great, you know, and you know what, I passionately believe that if you teach people to cook, it will change the way they live their lives. We can't make a business out of it. And I'm really interested in social policy and changing policy and creating jobs and holding jobs down and making sure those jobs work for local people. You can't do that as a cookery school. But you could do it. You could do it as a production food producer. So we transitioned the business at about year 5, 6, 7 from a cookery school into a food production entity, firm, company, to
make sure that we could take what we were doing mainstream. There's a great a load of discussion about obesity. There's a load of discussion about people's poor diets. The high street's full of it. In deprived areas, people can't even shop for good food. So our thinking was, okay, we can't teach everyone to cook. Feed them well. And that's where the transition from charity to business starts to take shape.
So you're now a charity, and you're also a bona fide catering business.
Yeah.
So who are your clients in terms of the business?
So in terms of the business, schools, nurseries, and a care home that we're working with. And interestingly, we're about to expand into North Wales. And so we'll be working with 16 care homes on that basis. And so that's where the commercial side of it is. And as a charity, we're still doing a lot of work in and around feeding people who are hungry. You know, recently we and when I say recently, over the last couple of years, we've run this campaign called Share Your Lunch, and we'd involved the Liverpool Echo, we'd involved Merseyside Police and everybody in it. And the idea behind that is, from a charitable perspective, is raise the awareness of the problem of hunger in this city, and then jointly raise the awareness that if you don't feed people well, they're more likely to stay in poverty. And so what we were trying to do with Share Your Lunch is, A, get the message out there, then raise donations to make sure that we could feed families well. So over here we're trading with schools, nurseries and care homes, and over here we're raising awareness and running programmes which will feed people well.
And the Share Your Lunch campaign about 2 years ago, it was really big, wasn't it? I mean, I remember seeing a big wraparound or a massive headline in the Liverpool Echo, and it was the first time I can remember the Echo being involved in something like that. How successful was it?
Amazing. I don't think Ali, the editor, would mind me saying. I don't think he'd think we thought we'd raised more than £10,000. And then over the space of about 18 months in total, we raised over £100,000 from donations from Liverpool City Region people. So strictly from donations, and that in itself delivered about 65,000-70,000 meals out into Liverpool. So fresh meals where previously people would have not eaten or relied on a food bank, we were getting fresh meals out directly as a consequence because of that donation.
And you had people coming in here, didn't you? Here at your offices in Matchworks in Speak, dropping money off, didn't you?
You know, we had people who were sending us cheques for a couple of £1,000, £3,000 was one of them. Pensioners, clearly pensioners, by the way. We knew they were pensioners, but they didn't want to be identified, saying, you know, keep up the good work. We had a guy coming here who said, you know, that he had a drink problem. And he passed me £300 in cash, and he said, "If you don't take it off me, you know." And I said, "I won't paraphrase as I'm sitting here now. If you didn't take, you don't take this off me and do something good with it, I'll piss it up the wall, right?" And he wanted to make a difference with the £300 that he would have spent on drink. That's how it connected with this local community, and that's the generosity that's out there in many ways. And what we were trying to do with the message is connect to that generosity and connect to the kind of source of the problem by providing a fairly powerful solution of putting good food on people's tables when they previously wouldn't have had any.
How has that aim developed over the past couple of years then, since the Share Your Lunch campaign?
Well, I think one of the things about charity is it's an important awareness raiser of the problem. But it's not a long-term solution. It cannot be a long-term solution. So what we've done is start to merge them both. And so our kind of commercial model now is predicated on, we still want to do that charitable work, but we don't want to keep going out for donations. So we want to generate as much business as we can. And then, for instance, if we work with a school, we will take between 7 and 9 pence per meal per day out of that school meal, and then we will transfer that over to creating a meal for somebody else. Now, what's interesting about that is it costs about £1.20 to create a meal for someone delivered who is hungry. So, you know, If we're in a school, somebody else can do the maths, but it does stack up. If we're in a school taking 7 pence per meal per day, and we're saving 300 children, there's 300 7 pences coming out, and that then starts to stack up for meals directly for people who may be hungry, either directly from that school or elsewhere in Liverpool.
And how do you get the meals direct to the people who are hungry? What's the procedure?
Well, so we work with loads of referral agencies. So anybody who is directly in contact with families, children's centres, for instance, community centres, for instance. You know, we work with Rhys Jones Centre. We've worked with the Garston Venny. So local organisations, they're the people who are in touch with people on the ground. What we're doing is saying we're the experts with food. So what we'll do is just make sure that we'll make sure that the food that you get is nutritious, whereas the food bank model is right now is ad hoc and donor driven. So it could be this or it could be that. What we're saying, it would always be a meal that you would recognise as food. This summer, we'll run a holiday hunger programme. We're going to do it in Liverpool and we're going to do it in North Wales. So the menu's already been set. So on day, children will be eating lasagnas one day, curries the next, fish and chips the next day, all stuff that they know as food. And they'll be eating that right through the summer holiday months.
And that's all fresh food, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just talk about what you define as fresh.
Yeah, I love the way food fresh has been twisted. Often organisations call fresh food something they cooked on the day, which has come out of the freezer and gone into the ovens, and that's fresh food. That isn't fresh food, and that's never going to be. We cook every single day from fresh. The chefs that we've got bring in the food through the front door, so the suppliers bring it in. We're chopping it up by hand. We get it done. It's getting cooked fresh on the day, goes into our ovens after being freshly produced, comes out cooked, and then it gets transported out to those who will need to eat it.
And you're competing against other catering companies, aren't you, for contracts with councils?
Yeah.
How does that work, for example, a school's catering contract?
Yeah, so we would never be allowed to bid for big catering contracts because we don't have the balance sheet of big companies. So what we're trying to do is pick it off one by one, trying to have relationships with head teachers and say, hey, go with us and we can manage your school. And we're managing one school here. And like I say, the contract in North Wales gives us a different footprint because we're then dealing with 16 care homes. So it's been a hard slog to get from A to strictly B. But what I'm really interested in is we will guarantee any school the same price as they're paying now, an improved food offer, training for their teachers, their parents and their children when it comes to cookery and cookery skills, and then a percentage of the money, the revenue that we would take from that school contract is ploughed back into the school. So if any family struggles at any point during that school year and teachers notice that children are struggling with hunger, we will feed those families for free. Now that's how we would treat a school contract. Every other provider would just provide food, and then the rest of it just leaves the city.
Well, what's the reaction of local authorities when you're there pitching forward for the business? Do they get that? Because you'd think they'd just say, "Wow, what a great idea."
So there's one local authority that we've still got to work here locally, who we worked with for a year, provided school food to 6 schools, never ever had a problem in the contract. We improved their food offer. We were competitive and we were about to go into the next strand. And the local councillors, when they changed from Labour to Labour, by the way, so might be giving it away over here, when they changed from Labour to Labour, said they didn't want what we had to offer, didn't want it, and our understanding is because the new councillors didn't want anything to do with the old councillors' regime. So forget the children are struggling with diet, forget that we'd improved the food offer, forget that we were going to create a whole food system to tackle food poverty that wasn't charity, just didn't like your model. Because it would belong to the old incumbents.
Well, did you kick off about that?
Well, of course. And we've, involved local MPs, involved the. It's a sad reflection of local politics when
a body of officers are not in control of what is necessarily what is needed on the ground. So you do a year and a half's work with senior officers to drag this piece of work through and get it to a point where it's ready to go. And then at the point, honestly, so one of the senior councillors spoke at an event we organised with John McDonnell and stood up and said, we're going to support this. We're going to make sure this happens. 2 weeks later, the same councillor with the same councillors said, we don't want this no more. Now, I know where the political interference came from, but, you know, let's not do that now. But what it says is a year and a half's worth of work goes to the wall, and all the prospect of making sure that the people are fed well, children are fed well, no extra cost, and the other spin-offs, interestingly, just goes to the wall at the whim of newly elected councillors who never even had the decency to visit us, who never wanted to see what we do. They just cancelled the whole programme and said, move on.
That was Robbie Davison from Can Cook with some thought-provoking stuff about food poverty and how our society is tackling the issue. And we'd love to hear your views on the subject as well. There are no easy solutions, whichever side of the fence you sit on. Well, that's all from the Baltic Triangle podcast for this month. We'll be back next month, and hopefully Mark Reeson will be with me as well. If you've got any subjects you want us to tackle, or you've got any interview ideas, you know what to do. Email me, mick@mickord.com. Thanks a lot.